change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Very happy today to be talking to Stephen King. Stephen King is the president and CEO of Growth Force. How are you, Stephen?
Doing great, Mickey.
And what is Growth Force?
Growth Force is an outsourced bookkeeping, accounting, and controller service for organizations that use QuickBooks. And we specialize in helping you not only be in compliance and do all the typical things you expect of accountants, but we know how to integrate QuickBooks into a full ecosystem to automate all your transactions. And then how do you get management accounting and management reporting so you can show the donors the tangible result of your gift and raise more money?
Okay. So there's a lot to unpack there. But first, I want to ask about your background. How did you get into, how did you invent Growth Force? How did all this come to be?
I did. I left Ernst & Young and I started my own CPA firm back in the 80s. Shows you my age here. And I hated it. I loved Ernst & Young, but I just hated my own practice because it was really hard to find trained bookkeepers and accountants, and turnover was a problem. And I thought if I could create an outsourced accounting bureau that my clients could get access to, then it would be easier for them to be able to do what they need to do. So I ended up, I went from there to Amnesty International. And then after 7 years at Amnesty, I started a company called Virtual Growth. We raised $43 million in venture capital funding.
Wow.
And then sold that and moved to Kingwood. And then we started up Growth Force as a separate, another version of the same idea.
Right. It's just amazing. What was it like working for Amnesty?
Oh, those were the best years of my life. I was a volunteer. Well, that's not true. Today is the best years of my life. I'm one of those guys who likes what I'm doing right now. But I was really blessed. I was a volunteer when I was at Ernst & Young. I was a manager of accounting system design. And I used to leave on Fridays at 3 o'clock to go coordinate the New York City tri-state area high school students. And we had about 65 schools, and we did a lot of human rights work and, you know, did a lot of banners and posters and letter writing and concerts and all kinds of stuff. And I got a call from one of the audit partners, and he said, "We got this nonprofit who just grown exponentially and grown from $6 million to $18 million because of MTV and U2 and Peter Gabriel and Sting, and they have outgrown their systems, and they can't get past the audit. And so you're the specialist in accounting system design and internal controls. Can you help them?" I was like, "Wow, do you know that I have a question authority poster on my window in my office?" And, you know, next thing you know, I'm meeting with the senior leadership, the executive director, and I ended up getting the job as the CFO, the deputy executive director for finance and administration. And I did that for 4 years. And literally, thanks to Peter Gabriel and Bruce and you two, we grew 300%. And after I put all the systems in place, I went to my boss, Jack Healy, the executive director, and I said, "All right, Jack, I'm ready to be executive director." And he said, "Well, you better learn how to raise money. That's the job of the ED." And 2 weeks later, the director of development quit.
Oh.
And he said, "Why don't you take over her job?" And so I left from being CFO and became director of development of a $20 million organization. And I did that for 3 years. And I really, what I learned there was how much of an impact accounting has on fundraising. If you can show the donors the tangible result of the gift, what the impact is, what outcomes happen when you make a donation, you're going to get more money. You're going to get higher average gifts. And according to the Society of Fundraising Executives, you're going to get more frequent giving. So that's kind of been my passion for the last 10 years.
Amazing. And to hear that you're actually tying in the accounting side of that with the fundraising side is excellent. I think that there are nonprofits who know that it needs to get done in terms of showing outcome measures and things like that. But you're talking about policies, processes, and procedures that a nonprofit should be using every day as a means of facilitating the fundraising effort, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's harder to run a nonprofit than it is to run a for-profit. I've done both. And cash flow is a challenge. You know, it's seasonal. You got a board of directors and watchdogs looking over your shoulders. For-profits don't have that. I mean, unless you get outside investors, you don't have a board. You often got self-taught staff who can't afford a controller for $125,000. So you have somebody who has the title of controller, but you know they often don't even have an accounting degree. And then you have a single point of failure. Not only just, you know, if that person leaves or doesn't have the answers, you have difficulties dealing with the board, but you also have a higher risk of fraud in nonprofits because of that lack of internal controls. And then you have to get an audit. Very few for-profits have to get an audit. And, you know, $1 million in most states, you got an auditor breathing down your back. And then you're struggling with the management reports, having data to make decisions like a well-run for-profit does. And the pandemic made it even harder. You know, you're challenged with having to make pivots and make adjustments to the whole model in some cases. And so, you know, we've really found that the organizations that we work with that are doing the best have data at their fingertips. They're able to look and see which programs should we stop? What programs should we start? What should we change? And then, you know, they use that to help them with innovation. And they've also got automation everywhere so that they don't waste money on accounting if they can avoid it by automating it.
Obviously, we want to talk about Growth Force. We want to talk about the 5-step framework you've mentioned to me in your notes. But what are some things that nonprofits should be doing right now, especially as we seem to be turning the corner from pandemic?
Well, what I see the well-run organizations are figuring out what's worked and actually been better as a result of moving to a Zoom world and what didn't. And, you know, starting with measuring the outcomes. You know, outcomes are the changes that happen because you exist, right?
Right.
So if you measure the performance of the programs that you've got, then you can start to make the key decisions that are critical to success. You know, which are the programs that have the biggest impact? And we've got this whole framework that we've developed to help you, you know, figure out everybody knows what the outputs are, what the outcomes are, but how do you measure that against your mission? You know, we work with the Fort Bend Women's Shelter and their mission is to help break the cycle of homelessness and abuse.
Right.
And their board and their management team thought, we're doing a good job. We've got 112 beds and they're full every night. But their mission was not to house people who are abused, abused women, but rather to break the cycle of homelessness. So by going through this framework, they were able to analyze which of the programs really help you further the mission the most. You know, which ones help you increase the quality of the work that you do, which ones help you serve more people, or which ones help you raise more money. And what they found was the program that really helped with the mission the most was their vocational training program, because that's what helped their clients get the first job. And if they got the first job, they were less likely to go back to the abuser. They could afford to get their own home. And so what they did was they said, okay, let's use our beds to fill them with people who want the vocational training. So you're able to have more of an impact on breaking the cycle of homelessness and abuse. And so then once you're able to show the outcomes that happen from the vocational training program, they're able to raise a lot of money to build that. Their donors are happy to say, oh, that makes sense. I've supported your homeless shelter. Now I would love to support your vocational training. And so that analysis, having the data, really is the first step. Then the second step is to look at how do you spend your money? What are the economics? What does it cost you to deliver every program? What is any revenue that comes in as a result of the program, either donated revenue or earned revenue? And then compare the relationship between the income and the expense. We call it unit economics. Look at the economics of each program. And then divide that program by the number of outputs, by the number of clients served, by the number of meals served, by the number of vocational trainings delivered. And now you've got something. Now you've got the ability to build a case statement and show the donor how their money helps create outcomes. And so we do this by setting up time tracking, and it's simple on the phone. We like T-sheets. And it's automated with Intuit Payroll. Intuit bought it. And so when you run the payroll, it automatically allocates the labor costs based on how people filled out their timesheet. There's no Excel spreadsheets. It's all automated. It's called activity-based costing. And so, you know, we work with an organization called the Village Learning and Achievement Center, and they were able to see what it costs for every client to go through the programs. And what that does is it allows you to show you where should you invest your limited dollars, because you can see where do you get the biggest impact.
Right.
You know, that's the exciting part, you know, to be able to say to the board, for the development office to have the knowledge, the management accounting to be able to say, for every dollar, this is what happens. In their cases, for $33, you're able to put three people on the bus so that they can go to their vocational training program.
Right.
So by looking at what it costs, looking at how much money comes in, and then dividing that net cost by the number of outcomes, you can see the cost per outcome. That's step two.
Okay. So you're saying essentially that nonprofits should be examining their economics as a means of gauging how they do business moving forward as we get out of pandemic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because this is a great opportunity now to review everything you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, where do you generate the most outputs that create the most outcomes? And then step three is compare the economics of each program and the efficacy, the effectiveness of each program to see where do you generate the most outcomes per dollar. You know, we do this stack ranking program where you rank each program based on, use it, increase the quality of service, like in the homeless shelter, the vocational training helped increase the quality of our ability to serve the mission. Does it allow us to serve more people, the quantity of people served, or does this help us bring in some money? And you multiply the results. You know, number one is you rank of each program and say, number one is the program that does it the most. Number three is the ones that do it the least. Then obviously number two is the ones that are somewhere in the between. And you just multiply quality times quantity times money. Because if you got, it's the highest one for increasing quality, the highest one for increasing quantity, and the highest one for bringing in money, that's your number one program. And money should never drive program. Program drives money. But having the ability in the village, when we went through this stack rank exercise, we had this program, state funded program that it didn't allow us to deliver great care. It allowed us to serve more people. So it was a one on more people, but it didn't allow us to do great care because the state of Texas doesn't give you a lot of money. And so by ranking those quality, quantity, and money, you could see that these four programs were pretty high up, but the worst money, the state run was the worst for money and the worst for quality. So 3 times 3 was a 9. And that lets the board be a strategic board. And that's, you know, that's allows you at the end of step three is to decide which programs directly impact the mission, which programs help you serve more money, and which help you meet your development goals. Because then now you got the management team can step four, revise the plan. And you know, the simple act of writing down goals helps get an organization aligned.
Yep.
It also helps you get discretionary effort. But you know, by setting a goals and updating a budget, then you can go to the board for approval and then monitor results. So that's step four. But my favorite step is step five, is raising more money. Once you've got this data, once you've got these reports, now you have a case statement.
Yeah. So examine my outcomes, take a look at the economics that lead up to that outcome. Examining my economics helps me to decide which programs to stop, start, or continue. I can use that data to revise my ongoing plan, whether that's a strategic plan for the organization, which has, of course, something to do with the ongoing business plan for the organization. And then with that plan, go about raising more money specific to those things that we're deciding to continue.
Exactly right. And what's wonderful about it, because we automate everything, you get all this for less than the cost of a bookkeeper. I mean, it actually saves you money on the accounting side too.
Okay. So let's come down to brass tacks. What are we talking about to be able to use Growth Force? Am I calling a person? Am I buying some software? What does that mean?
No, it's a team. It's a team and a technology. You get a dedicated bookkeeper, a staff accountant, and a controller. And typically what happens is you keep the person that you have, right? Everybody has a trusted bookkeeper, you know, and or an office manager, or they might be called accounting manager or a finance manager or maybe even controller, but they don't have an accounting degree or an MBA or a CPA. And so what we do is we complement that person. You don't fire anybody unless they don't have the skills. We train them on how to read and interpret the results, on how to process the information to get you those results. And then, you know, our average fee is $3,000 to $4,000 a month. I mean, it's less than the cost of a bookkeeper.
That's right.
You get a controller, a dedicated team. So, you know, we help you with the board reports. We teach you how to answer the board questions. Yep. We'll answer, we'll go with you to the finance committee and help you make sure that you're ready for all the questions they may ask.
Yep. Excellent stuff. What do I need to have ready as a nonprofit? What do I need to have ready to go on my end before I call you?
Oh, just QuickBooks. I mean, literally, we have clients, you know, that are everywhere from you're starting up and they've got funding and now they want to do it right from the very beginning, mm-hmm. to, you know, organizations serving a million members and anywhere in between. It's completely a la carte. It's complete. Everybody's custom. Everybody gets their own solution. And it's, you know, we have a financial management assessment, growthforce.com/NFP, as in non-for-profit.
Right.
And that'll give you a grade and a score to see where you're doing so that you can understand your own financial management strengths and weaknesses.
Let's explain a little bit for folks who may not know exactly what a controller does.
Sure. A controller controls the accounting function, right? They, in some nonprofits called a comptroller. That's actually a government term, but you're responsible for managing the close of the books, for managing the delivery of the financial reports. And they are responsible for reading and interpreting those results and explaining them to management. So every month, our controllers sit down with the executive directors or the finance manager or the director of development and tell them what's going on and help them read and interpret the results. The big difference with us, we don't have to do it all. We would prefer to teach you how to do as much as possible. You know, we've got a Survivors Ventures as one of our clients, and what she just did a case study, she said, what I love is you taught me how to go into QuickBooks. And look, when I have to write a grant report, I can pull up the data that I need at my fingertips. And that helps lower the cost. But what we're trying to do is empower you by teaching you how to read and interpret the results, by teaching you how to unleash the power of QuickBooks. So the controller is responsible for making sure all of that gets done.
Right. And frankly, an invaluable thing for any nonprofit to have. I've been lucky. I've served on a couple boards that went through, they were proud of their books and rightfully so, right? They did a good job of doing things properly, but I can see how that kind of thing can get out of control for a nonprofit in a hurry if they didn't have the backgrounds on board.
And it pays for itself. It pays, if you have a good controller, like they're helping you with your case statement. You're helping you with your, you know, showing the donor, mm-hmm. showing the foundation how they spent last year's grant so that they're going to tell you how to, why they need to give you more money next year. And, you know, things like joint cost allocation, you know, you can allocate the overhead, you can allocate the salary of the executive director, you can allocate the real costs of the lights and the utilities and the chairs and the desks to the programs, but it has to be auditable. And by setting up time tracking, and we use a lot of different time tracking systems. T-Sheets is just the cheapest and built into QuickBooks already.
Right.
Now you have an audit trail. The auditors are being like, oh yeah, of course we'll accept that allocation because there is the timesheets.
Right. Awesome stuff, Stephen. I'm afraid we're running out of time. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you and learn more about GrowthForce, how would you suggest they go about doing that?
Well, our website is www.growthforce.com. And so if you're struggling with financial management or you're not getting actionable insights for the board, you can go there to growthforce.com/NFP, non-for-profit. And start the conversation with one of our team members, and they'll give you some advice. And when you fill out that form, you'll also get on our nonprofit email list, where we give a lot of content. We share what we learn with our clients. And, you know, obviously you can unsubscribe at any time, but our members tell us, our clients and friends tell us they love our weekly newsletter. You can email me, Stephen, Stephen, @growthforce.com. And our website, I told you, LinkedIn, I'm Stephen King, Stephen King, CPA. And I'm happy to answer questions. So if your listeners want to email me, you know, I get a lot of joy from helping the nonprofit community make a difference in the world.
Fantastic. Thank you, Stephen. I hope we can do another podcast together in the future. And in the meantime, I thank you for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me, Mickey.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.